Okay, welcome to Colonial Outcast episode something, whatever it is. I'll put it in the description later. And today we will be discussing cops, police, law enforcement, the thin blue line, and about how we love them and are true to blue. We stand with blue and how we back the boys in blue. Just kidding. We fucking don't. So that F-bomb in the beginning will demonetize this episode on YouTube, which is fine because we're talking about campus protests, genocide, the Rafa assault, and ACAB, so it's going to get demonetized anyways. You see, here at Colonial Outcast, we seek to challenge Western hegemony and the imperialist status quo, which is bad for everybody. And this is most clearly demonstrated by examining cops, because modern law enforcement is molded and influenced by forms of colonial coercion, i.e. the violence and control used to suppress indigenous populations in European colonies that is imported back to Europe to be used on European and now American citizens. What does that mean and how does that work? We're going to get into it. But first today, I am joined by co-host Mark Wayne and series regular Travis, who was with me at the University of Texas pro-Palestine protest encampment yesterday, which got spicy. What's up, fellas?
Hey.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the proper etiquette?
I don't.
I did it.
I have poor radio etiquette, so I have no idea. So,
long time listener, first time caller. Oh, wait, sorry. Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So we all saw the UT protests. There was also a joint protest going on at USC. UCLA was the one protest. And we're recording this on April 30th to be released on April 31st. Or is it May 1st tomorrow? I don't even know what year it is. Oh, it's May 1st tomorrow. Okay. Yeah. So yesterday, the 29th, there was also a massive protest at UCLA. A bunch of Zionist interests made a GoFundMe. Jerry Seinfeld's wife gave like $5,000 and they had a counter protest concert, which is very true to form. Yeah, but I'm sure you guys have been seeing, all these listeners have been following the massive upsurge in college campus pro-Palestine protests, followed by the reactive administration backlash, calling in cops. Now it's flaring up in Europe, the Middle East, Australia, Japan. What happened in Columbia University is kind of spread across the globe. And UT, we got to take part in it, and Texas cops are very militarized, so it got pretty real for a bit. Over 100 people got arrested. They were throwing out pepper spray. They had this MassCal medical bus come on campus.
Flashbangs. They tossed some flashbangs.
Yeah, they tossed flashbang grenades.
Really?
Yeah, they ripped a disabled woman or girl or whatever off of her walker and then like tossed the walker.
I saw that.
Yeah, that went viral. You know, it's just great guys. Great guys.
Just top things.
Yeah. So before we begin my show notes, say contextualize the student protest. And that's like all I wrote. Fuck my life. Okay. Well, what I can say is that discontent over how college administrations across the country have been dealing with the genocide in Palestine have been really pissing students off, right? Pro-Palestine student organizations have been arbitrarily banned and suspended. Students have been attacked on campus with no repercussions for the assailants, like ex-IDF veterans at Columbia, who attended Columbia University, were like spraying skunk water, which is what they use to terrorize people on the West Bank at Columbia University students. That's just one of the more notorious examples. The media has portrayed kids saying ceasefire now and from the river to the sea as Hamas supporters and terrorist sympathizers. And the list of grievances goes on. And I think things finally blew up on Columbia's campus, which is like on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and is the Zionist capital of the world outside of Tel Aviv. It's no surprise to me. I went to Columbia. All these things kind of built to a critical mass, and a lot of the students are fed up, and it just kind of exploded in the context of the genocide happening in Palestine. So just asking you guys, so far, what have you guys found remarkable about this entire movement and situation?
I think you're talking about the students being unhappy with, you know, the college's general treatment of and statements around the genocide in Palestine. I think the second one was, we noticed this talking to some of the, you know, some of the students yesterday. So a lot of them are just now becoming aware, which is not unusual. A lot of people don't know about this. Just now becoming aware that most of their endowments, their college endowments, function like hedge funds, and that, you know, most of these colleges have significant investments in either, you know, directly in Israeli companies or, you know, industries that contribute to the occupation and oppression in Palestine. So I talked to several students yesterday who were like, oh yeah, no, I just found that out. Or wow, you're just telling me that now. I didn't know that. And I was like, yeah, that's what, you know, this is what divest means, right? That's what we're divesting. That's what you want them to divest from. So I think that was definitely part of it.
Yeah. And what's significant about that is I was just like on a drive, like last week, listening to all this reporting about the Columbia protests, you know, from the New York Times, different like news podcasts, the Daily is the New York Times podcast. They mention all these protests, but they never mention what they're about, like what the students are asking for. And it's very simple. Yeah. It's about divestment. Yeah. It's not, that's all it is. It's just about divesting from Israeli investments.
I think that is probably, to me, one of the most extraordinary things about this is the disconnect between what is happening at these protests and what is being reported. And then even more surprising is who's believing it. Like they're protesting a genocide, you know, they're protesting, like you said, divestment on the news, anti-Semitism. That's the headline. So obviously it's a Zionist trick, but the fact that it's just so blatantly obvious, like you can turn on the news, watch that headline, anti-Semitic protest, look at social media and say, you see Jewish students protesting a genocide. To me, that huge ocean of dissidents from that, and the fact that people still see these protests as being some anti-Semitic pro-terrorist march is the most extraordinary part about that. Because at least during the Vietnam protest, the media was clearly saying they're against the war in Vietnam. Right.
Yeah, but the legacy media was also doing other things like framing it.
Yeah. They were saying that they're pro Viet Cong. They want American soldiers to die. I get all that. But I'm just saying, like,
to that point, like, you know, the what they're requesting, like what their demand, you know, their demands, so to speak, are super concrete, very, very achievable, and within the college's power to do, right? Because a lot of times it's like, well, you're protesting something Columbia doesn't control. You're protesting something schools. No, this is something that they can change. They can change overnight if they want to, you know. So, schools have divested before. Like, it can happen. And so that's wild, right? Because the news is talking about this like it's some kind of, you know, whiling and out, you know, behavior on campus. And it's like, no, they're asking for very concrete, deliverable things that you could do. Their school could do.
Right.
You know, it's the opposite of how it's being portrayed.
Right. And so going to Columbia, there was always like this strong legacy and tradition of activism that was really celebrated when I went there. It's like Columbia was at the forefront of protesting the Vietnam War. You know, they divested from fossil fuels after student protests and boycotts. They divested from South African apartheid. And of course, in every one of those single situations, they were punished and reviled by the administration and by the press. And then like 3 years later, Columbia comes back and is like, look at us, you know, we're so progressive, you know, even though the administration was fighting these students every inch of the way. And the same with UT, you know, the UT was a big hub for civil rights protests in the 60s. And the students got like crushed by the administration. And then UT, you know, uses that as like a recruiting thing when you go on tours. And, you know, they talk about the South Lawn, about, you know, the protests held in the South Lawn, which we were there yesterday watching cops beat the shit out of liberal arts majors. That way, like,
they put Herzl in charge.
Yeah.
They give you that tour, then they put Herzl in charge of the school.
Yeah. So, yeah, the hypocrisy and the disconnect is massive. It's like nothing's new. Student movements, though, are always significant. So this is really interesting to see. And people are downplaying it. It's like, look at these college kids. They don't know, you know, you know, their ass from an end of the stick, or I don't even know if that's a real.
Why don't they go to Palestine and get murdered by Hamas?
Yeah, it's like, do you think they have universities in Gaza? Well, yeah, they had a lot until Israel destroyed them all. Until Israel destroyed them all. So,
yeah.
What one of the most hilarious comments was, stop wasting your parents' money. Meanwhile, we're sending billions to Israel using our money.
Or paying the overtime for 200 freaking state troopers.
Yeah. Oh, God. I was going to say, dude, when I went to USC, the USC protest, and I just saw like 4 fucking helicopters, a whole platoon of freaking cops. I'm like, that's got to at least be over $1 million.
Oh, God. The hourly operating cost of a helicopter is high enough, let alone 4. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, aren't there like rapes and murders happening in this city right now? I mean, do you think that might be better off spent that way?
Bro, it's
insane. Like
that's an excellent segue into talking about the genesis.
Uvalde?
No, we're gonna get into Uvalde. We're gonna get into Uvalde and we're gonna contextualize that for our overseas listeners. But that's
please do.
Yeah, but that is an excellent segue into talking about the genesis of the modern day law enforcement and how they are not here to protect us. But first, let's watch, because Al Jazeera was on the ground at UT yesterday, and let's watch this short reel that they published about it. And so if you're just listening on audio, I'm going to narrate it for you because it's only captions. But yeah, this is what was recorded and this is what was reported, and I'm just going to send it because yesterday was
narrate in a British accent if you can. No,
I'm not doing that. My acting is so rusty, and I haven't done dialogue training for British accents. So here we go, Al Jazeera. Oh. This video is believed to show U.S. police arresting a disabled person during an anti-war protest at the University of Texas. Dozens of protesters were arrested as armed police moved in to dismantle a camp set up to protest Israel's war on Gaza. Nope, it was to divest. Police allegedly used flashbangs. They did. And pepper spray. They did. I saw it to clear the crowd and I smelt it. Several students were filmed receiving treatment. Yeah, because they freaking used pepper spray on kids. Just more footage of them. Okay, the university has said encampments are prohibited on campus. Okay, but these goon squads are ready to go. There are like hundreds of cops from Department of Public Safety there. Texas police have been accused of using excessive force. Well, I mean, they're not accused. We're literally watching them punch kids. And then, hang on, let's let the student speak for a second.
I mean, the police responded the same way in Vietnam. They responded the same way during the Civil Rights Movement. They only know aggression against peaceful protests.
Despite police clearing the encampment, more students began rallying in the area. Some of them were holding umbrellas to protect against the pepper spray. Yep. Ton of umbrellas. The chants also were awesome. I've been getting compliments from people in the UK saying we're going to use those. The confrontation was an escalation from last week. Apparently it was more violent than on Wednesday when more than 50 people were arrested. Okay, so yesterday about 100 people were arrested.
Are sitting down on their butts in the grass. The only violence is when the cops walk into the circle, grab a protester, and haul them out.
The protesters are calling on universities to cut ties with Israel. Check. Around 1,000 people have been arrested on university campuses across the United States. And KUT Austin reported they had this really problematic headline that said students allegedly sprayed with pepper spray when they attempted to block police. And it's like, that's incorrect. They didn't attempt to block police. We did, and we pushed all the cops off campus. We kettled them, which we'll get into later, had them surrounded, so they had to withdraw.
Well, no, they're just taking cues from the IDF. Whenever Hamas spanks their ass in Gaza, they're just saying, "Hey, don't talk about
that." That gives more credit to the cops, like they were being aggressed somehow or resistance about the when they first started spraying. It was so they cleared the encampment, and then the people that were still in the park area were refusing to leave, and they were like, no, you're going to leave, and they linked arms, and then they started spraying them. That was the first time they sprayed anyway.
Okay.
That I saw. But yeah, to your point, Greg, and then they marched them all the way off campus. They would push them back to an area. They would set up a little cordon, and then, you know, this was at this point, it was mostly APD, and then you could see APD be like, all right, I think we should probably back up some more, and then they'd move back again, and then the students just kept doing that, and then ran them all the way off school grounds.
So... a lot of people before we get into the glorious details of that engagement, cause I had a great time. All right. I'm not going to lie, but we can tell. We'll get into that later. I wanted to talk about a lot of this stark police violence, about how everybody's saying things like the only violence that is ever perpetrated, or the 99% of the violence that is perpetrated at these protests is done by police. I mean, it's true. So I wanted to introduce into the discourse this idea of the term, the imperial boomerang. It's a sociological term that really describes what's happening with police in the US, the UK, in Germany, the unprecedented violence of Western cops as opposed to other. I'm not saying that cops in other countries aren't violent, but I'm just saying there's a unique type of conduct that you see in the West. And let's talk about the imperial boomerang. So the imperial boomerang, okay, strap in for about 4 minutes of me talking to you. I wrote this specially for each and every single one of you beautiful individuals, okay? The imperial boomerang, or Foucault's boomerang, is the thesis that governments that develop repressive techniques to control colonial territories will eventually deploy those same techniques domestically against their own citizens. So the same systems of colonial coercion will, through imperial feedback, be used on the empire's own citizens. If you essentially field test these forms of control overseas and they work, why wouldn't the ruling class deploy them on their own unruly citizens? So let's give some examples by talking about cops, how it all started and how they actually assert colonial control over us, American citizens. To begin, modern day police are a substitute for the age old constable and watch system of protection. A constable was a public officer, usually of a town or a township, responsible for keeping the peace and for minor judicial duties, like executing warrants for a local justice of the peace. And watchmen were organized groups of men, usually authorized by a state, government, city, or society, to deter criminal activity and provide law enforcement, as well as traditionally perform the services of public safety, fire watch, crime detection, recovery of stolen goods. Watchmen have existed since the earliest recorded times in various guises throughout the world, and were generally succeeded by the emergence of formally organized professional policemen. In the 18th century, law enforcement and policing was left entirely to local initiative, right? So if strikes and protests and perceived rises in crime became an issue, they'd call in the army. And that was always very messy. Officials began to contemplate an alternative to volunteer policing, but in England, they didn't want their police to be as militant as the French gendarmerie. The upper class and the rising middle class were too jealous of their perceived liberties for French militarism. So in 1829, the London Metropolitan Police was founded. It was supposed to be a middle ground between the militancy of the gendarmerie and the constable and watch system that had no coercive force at all. But here's the tension. Even though the civic police was crafted as an alternative to martial law, it was nevertheless militarized from the outset. And the police borrowed less from the military per se, but more from colonial forms of control. Sir Robert Peel, who founded the London Metropolitan Police, had colonial experience, serving essentially as Northern Ireland's regional governor for a time, and developed forms of colonial coercion that he brought to the London Police. He took forms of coercion from the Dublin Metropolitan Police in Ireland, which was essentially an armed counterinsurgency force responsible for punishing crime, dealing with public disorder and uprisings. But just like any colonial project, the line between crime and uprising is never clear. They're always bleeding together. a decade before the London Metropolitan Police were founded, he founded the Royal Irish Constabulary, responsible for policing rural districts in Ireland. It was composed of army veterans, used military rank structure. They carried carbines and were housed in barracks and patrolled designated precincts. And well, he took that structure of colonial practice, you know, of a counterinsurgency force, and slapped it on his new London Met Police, which served as a model for the fledgling police in Boston, New York, Philadelphia. So this is just one example about how the police were militarized from the start. A lot of people like to say, you know, in the 70s, in response to the Vietnam backlash, you know, they got increasingly more militarized and it's only gotten worse. It's like, nah, dude, they've always been militarized. It's just, you know, getting more apparent now. And one example of the sociological dynamics of the Imperial Boomerang, this is a great example of the Imperial Boomerang. Other examples are about how modern police were also born out of slave patrols, another Anglo counterinsurgency force in the Caribbean and Carolinas. A modern example of the Imperial Boomerang is how our cops go to Israel to train with the IDF, use Israeli technology and spyware, the same technology and spyware that is counterinsurgent in nature and used to enforce occupation and apartheid on Palestinians. And then they come back to America to use those same forms of colonial coercion on American citizens. Let this episode serve as your periodic reminder that in addition to slave patrols, American policing has its roots in union busting, property protection, and scab defense, i.e. the protecting of non-union workers from striking workers. Cops have been on the wrong side of every labor struggle and have always moved to squash civil dissent on and off academic campuses. They were the main perpetrators of violence during the civil rights movement, the Vietnam backlash, South African apartheid, the 2003 Iraq War, the BLM movement, and now the pro-Palestine movement. It's almost like they don't protect and serve the people, but instead the interests of the ruling elite. Okay, essay over. Travis, do you feel like you saw any of this at play yesterday at UT?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if cops had anything to do with protecting, you know, personal rights or freedoms or the individual or anything remotely like that, they wouldn't be in there yanking college students at a peaceful protest off a field violently. You know, to your point, the roots absolutely predict the behavior, right? And the roots, especially in the United States, are all property protection. Slaves are property. You know, the factory's property. These are all property and capitalism defenses, right? That's what the police have always been for. They're always there to defend the guy, the landowner, the guy making money, the guy that owns the factory, you know, the guy who owns the school, or in this case, probably, I don't know, Greg Abbott's ego, something like that, right? But then nothing there had anything to do with serving and or protecting. So, well, unless you mean, again, protection of, not us.
Yeah, the property of the South Lawn on UT campus in between,
yeah, exactly.
in between the UT Tower and Littlefield Fountain. That's what they were protecting. Not the students that inhabit the campus, not actual humans, but yeah. So thought I would use that little essay to frame how we approach these protests. So
I would argue they're even ideologically, they're protecting some kind of political estate, right? Some kind of political ideological estate, you know, just because it's not physical doesn't mean it's not, you know, some kind of establishment property. I think the concepts jive.
I was going to say, like, okay, besides all that, I also see a symbolic reason, you know, it's the sending the police to break up a demonstration against Israel. It's also a symbolic move, you know, by not just the university, but also, the Texas government, the city of Austin. It's their way of saying, hey, look, Israel, we got your back. Okay. Your enemies are our enemies. That's the symbolic gesture because, okay, obviously these kids weren't doing any damage to property. They're sitting in a fucking circle on the grass.
Well, they were trespassing. They were trespassing.
trespassing, yeah. But who gives a fuck? Yeah. People, you could try. A lot of people trespass on property all the time.
Yeah, it's still an inherent. Inherently property oriented action, right? Yeah, trespassing.
Even under a capitalist reasoning logic, that's not what this is about, in my opinion. It's a symbolic move to say, "Hey, look, Texas stands with Israel." That's what I saw, because they don't want the PR of showing these protests against Israel being left untouched. So by sending in muscle to go take care of them, it's like, we got you, bro. We don't like these guys either. Anybody who stands against you stands against us. It's the solidarity with Israel.
Right. I do believe the politics are also partially just inherently racial and xenophobic, yeah. Right? It's not only are they brown people, they're brown Muslims. You know, and so you cannot back them. We will not back them.
Right. And so another one of Greg Abbott, guys, the governor of Texas is Greg Abbott. He's a absolute Zionist to the core, Christian, of the Christian persuasion. He's also implements, apart from the whole Israel-Palestine issue, incredibly racist and xenophobic policies towards people of Hispanic descent as well, with his border policy that's intentionally cruel and brutal. And, like what, lining the Guadalupe River with?
Yeah, he's responsible. Wire. He's responsible for, you know, people drowning. He's responsible for children getting separated. He's responsible for families getting put in cages, you know, refugee families. He's responsible for a lot of gnarly shit.
Right. But he decries racism openly, specifically anti-Semitism. So he says, like, we will not tolerate anti-Semitism on school campus. So, violent anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic protests on our Texas college campuses. And so when whoever was there setting up the illegal encampment on the South Lawn, don't know who any of these people were. When they set it up, it was inherently peaceful. What happened was it had been planned for a couple days by a small group of people. Tents were brought, folding tables were brought. It looked like just kind of chilling out on the pavilion. Some of these tables were going to be used for exhibits. And then when 12:45 p.m. hit, all the tents were busted out. The tables were flipped over, overturned, circled the wagons with the table, created a massive barricade around all the tents. Then they took chains, chained all the folding tables together, and then put banners up, locked arms, and just waited for the inevitable heavy-handed police response, because they knew that was coming. So this is what I recorded from when the encampment was set up, about 12:47, and the police hadn't been on site. There was a couple cops on site at this time, but it took DPS, the Department of Public Safety, like all those state troopers with the huge nightsticks, like about an hour to respond. And
it was about five APD standing there watching it for 5 hours while they obviously had called it in, and then, you know, 40 state troopers, 60 state troopers show up on motorcycles.
Yeah.
Roughly how many police personnel eventually were on site?
I think at least 80. I'm guessing, if I'm going by square, it's at least 20 on a side, plus the little lane they set up with their bike cops.
Oh, no.
They're snatch and grab teams. They had like two that were like 5 to 7 people each, I think, something like that.
They had a bird in the sky too?
No.
No, not that I saw.
No, but
really?
No, but there were at least 200 cops on site.
They had a lot more than were on the, I'm talking about the ones on the lawn, sorry. Yeah, there's obviously a lot more in support.
Yeah, so this is how it began, and I'll narrate again if you're just listening. So the encampment is a bunch of circled tables. There's a massive banner that says Jews against Zionism, because a lot of this was organized in liaison with Jewish Voice for Peace. And they're just getting ready for the escalation that eventually happens that you saw on that Al Jazeera clip. And there again, there's a banner, Jews against Zionism. And they made that banner because Greg Abbott was so adamant that they would not tolerate anti-Semitism on campus. So they made that the big.
Did the local news get a good angle of that sign, that little banner?
No. Because by the time news was on site, so were the cops surrounding it in perimeter. So as this you know, situation developed. There was a lot of back and forth. There was multiple actions going on around campus at the same time. There's an attempt to stop the bus with all the detainees in from leaving. I know some de-arrests happened. And if you're listening and you're like, what is a de-arrest? It's that when protesters force the cops to release someone that they have arrested because the cops are outnumbered, they can't move, and there's really nothing they can do in the situation except start shooting protesters, which is never a good look. So they just let the protesters go. And there's a whole strategy to it, which I'm not going to get into on this episode, but a number of people were de-arrested, but obviously they still arrested about 100 people who are actually, some of them are, most of them have gotten out by the time this episode airs. Yeah. And so they left, and then I'm not going to get into the geography of the UT campus, but the cops got the bulk of their forces into basically a choke point, and as they were trying to leave, and they got kettled, which means they got surrounded by massive protesters, and they couldn't get out. They couldn't force their way out, so they just had to withdraw. And so they actually ended up getting kicked off campus ignominiously, completely ignominiously.
Yeah, they moved into like an area where there was like a three-way intersection, and then like a route out the back, and the protesters filled like all the sides, and then pushed them into where it was a straight lane, and they just gave up ground repeatedly over the next like hour until they were off campus completely.
Yeah, and so
that's beautiful.
Oh yeah, and so
that's very impressive for the protesters to be able to do that. I think they've really evolved their strategies since, you know, BLM.
Yeah.
Probably they learned a lot of lessons from BLM. I think BLM set the groundwork for a lot of these tactics that we've adapted to. It's a cat and mouse game.
Yeah. And the cops withdrawing was actually kind of epic. You had a rear guard of bike cops literally using their bicycles as like,
that's awesome.
Like shields. Let me
against the violent Jews.
Yeah, against the peaceful mob of students. So
the ordinance these guys show up with is nuts. I don't know if you ever noticed this, Greg. I definitely hadn't.
Yeah,
the state troopers' motorcycles have M4s on the back. Every motorcycle. I've never fucking seen that before.
Yeah. So here's them getting this footage is epic. Mark, check this out. So that's a tiny line of cops.
God, that is beautiful.
Yeah, so they got kicked off, and then there was then they tried to withdraw into this bus, this metropolitan bus, because they had so many cops that they didn't want to bring cop cars or squad cars, so they all just loaded up into a metro bus and came on campus. But the metro bus didn't back up, so it had an avenue of escape. So basically,
Was it facing in a direction where it could freaking exfil?
Yeah. So we surrounded the bus, this bus full of like 40 cops, and it was backing. It had to go in reverse out of the university campus, and it took them like 20 minutes. And so
freaking nine point turn going on.
Yeah. And so I have no idea who is chanting right now. I don't know whose voice this is. But here's a video of that. I'm just showing it now before we get into.
I also want you to notice that the bus says the bus is flashing out of service the whole time, which is hilarious.
Yeah, and before we get into the bulk of this discussion, I just want to play it.
You fascist!
Fuck you, fascist!
Fuck you, fascist!
Fuck you, fascist!
No idea who that is.
Yeah, guys, that bus is full of cops, and they're trying to leave.
Man, that guy's sweaty.
And they're also fascists. Oh, yeah, they can't turn around, so they have to go in reverse the whole way.
Fuck you, fascists! Fuck you, fascists! Fuck you, fascists!
Fuck you, fascists!
Oh my God, I'm fucking tired.
Yeah, we could tell.
Yeah.
He's all sweating.
It was a little tough.
It looked so humid just watching the video.
Well, Greg was talking about that. We were like, you know, these guys are having a rough time now, man. You're gonna be having a real. You're gonna have dudes fall out in July. So the next goal is to get one, is to get a guy who locked his knees and falls out in line in July.
Yeah. And so that entire incident was so embarrassing that the UT administration put out this this press release that was just complete lies all around. And I'm just going to
take, do you have it?
Oh yeah. I'm going to read it. Okay.
Oh, sweet.
I haven't seen this.
Oh no. it was in a Signal group. It was passed around a Signal group that no longer exists.
Oh, nice.
So after protesters ignored repeated directives from both the administration and law enforcement officers to comply with institutional rules and remove tents assembled on the university's south lawn. First of all, there was no warning given. Usually they do an announcement, over loudspeakers. Travis, was there an announcement over loudspeakers?
No, saying what?
Like disperse, dismantle the tents and get off the lawn.
Yeah, they did, but nobody could hear it. It was so freaking quiet. If you weren't right by that dang statue, you couldn't have heard it.
Okay, yeah. And so, first of all, you couldn't hear it. Usually, and it was playing for like, what, 10 minutes, maybe less?
Not even that. I heard like it literally, it didn't like recycle. It literally was just like, Greg, it was less than like 30 seconds long.
Yeah. Okay. Then it says, then physically engaged with and verbally assaulted the dean of students' staff who attempted to confiscate them. The tents? No dean of students.
That never happened. No administration ever approached that site at all. Yeah. They were standing up on the top of the steps. They never got even close. That's total BS.
Yeah. So UT and partner law enforcement agencies dismantled an encampment and arrested several protesters. What they mean is they violently arrested over 100 people. So baseball-sized rocks were found strategically placed within the encampment. First of all, they were not rocks. They were sandbags placed in the tents to make the tents harder for the cops to move. Rocks.
And not only did no one throw anything, the people inside the encampment were sitting with their arms locked the entire time. You know what I mean? Like they literally weren't moving. People were heat catting because they weren't even drinking water. They were not unlocking their arms for anything.
Yeah.
So they absolutely weren't throwing shit. That's just total BS.
Yeah. So the majority of protesters are believed to be unaffiliated with the university. Also fucking bullshit. Did you see how many people were in that protest forcing the cops back, Mark? Do you think that's all adults who just live in Austin, or do you think that was mostly students?
I'm bored, Susan. Can we go out and have some fun?
Yeah. Also, like there was a lot of people who clearly, you know, either weren't students anymore or weren't, you know, 20-year-olds, but that was nobody that was sitting inside that tent ring, right? That occupied camp zone was those were almost all students. That's totally BS. And the vast majority of the marchers were all students. There may have been like, what, Greg, what would you estimate? Less than 2% weren't?
Yeah.
Like, there was only a handful of people supporting that weren't like, you know, on students. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some faculty and stuff, some outside people, but vast majority.
Yeah.
So we're obviously co-eds.
So on Saturday, the university received extensive online threats from a group organizing today's protest. Okay. I'm not saying I know anything, but perhaps that group existed only on a Signal chat that no longer exists, and it wasn't more than like 15 people, and probably no threats were sent because it was all very hush-hush, and that's why everybody was taken unawares. So also bullshit, not that I have any inside information. And they've been reported to local, state, and federal law enforcement. No, they haven't, because there are no freaking online threats. Since October and prior to April 24th, no fewer than 13 pro-Palestinian free speech events were held on the UT campus, and 4 since then, largely without incident. I think people last Wednesday would disagree when they were literally beating the shit out of journalists and stuff, so... Okay.
Yeah, the Jewish kid with two Israeli parents who's a pro-Palestinian activist who got run over by a horse.
Yeah.
Who was interviewed about it that I saw today. Yeah, pretty sure he would disagree with that.
Yeah. The university will continue to support the free speech and assembly rights of our community while also enforcing its institutional rules. And that's what UT put out after that. And that's what the cops endorsed. And of course, there was an entire, on the activist side, an entire police scanner team. And they're just like, yeah, dude, these cops sound so tired and so pissed. And it's like, yeah. They were taking abuse the whole time. The Department of public safety was getting one of the most hardcore, embarrassing chants ever. Who failed Uvalde DPS? Which is
Oh shit!
Yeah,
that's awesome. So they brought up Uvalde. That was one of the chants.
Yeah. So
yeah, that was a good one. There is no riot here. Why are you in riot gear? It's a good one. Because yeah. They were in riot gear. They showed up with batons and riot helmets.
Yeah.
I was watching you live while I was driving to work. Mm-hmm. So I had it on my phone and I was watching it. I was seeing you go in and out, like your live would stop and it'd go back on and then stop again. But I followed it the whole time. You were sweaty.
His phone kept overheating. That's why the
video. Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, I was wondering what.
Yeah. So these cops are going to be sucking come summertime and just standing out in the Texas heat, full kit, ballistic plates. Getting mocked by 18-year-olds. So, I did want to talk about this because, first of all, you know, the Rafa assault is going to happen, and that needs to be our next episode ASAP. But what a lot of the reaction to this massive campus uprising, which I'm super pumped about, because, you know, students are generally on the right side of history, and like, people try to discount them, but it's like, dude, they're the future. They're coming in. You're going out. So I found this atrocious video on Instagram that kind of by this quote unquote comedian who's just obviously a man child, but it so accurately encapsulates how people try to dismiss these student movements.
Are you going to show Bill Maher?
No. Bill Maher for me is... I can't watch him without getting irrationally pissed at this point. He's just a smug elitist asshole who's been wrong about everything. And like, he's just irredeemably racist. This guy's actually
the maddest I've ever seen. This speaks to Bill Maher's character. The maddest I've ever seen Bill Maher on any interview or show is when Bill Burr pointed out that Bill Maher's 10 years older than he is. Mm-hmm. And so might like different music, and Bill Maher loses his shit. Like, I'm not that much older than you. I'm not that much older. It's like, that sounds like a sensitive issue for you, bud.
Yeah.
Did you hear that, like, there's a video footage played from Bill Maher on his opinion about the Vietnam War, how he actually, like, he was justifying the Vietnam War. So it's like, dude, you do not have a good track record of being right about this shit. Mark, shut the fuck up.
Mark and I are just trying to make Greg mad right now. That's what we're doing.
No, I'm not mad. I'm not mad.
We're just trying to get him riled up.
I'm not 10 years older than you. I like the cool kid music. The hip,
exactly.
Yeah. I like the hip hops. So yeah, listen to this douche, bro. It's in microcosm how every older person is trying to discredit these students. And I'm going to interject a couple times in here. So let's check him out. For those of you listening, this dude is, if you hear background noise, that's this man-child riding a skateboard as he films the video. He's got rave glasses on, a hat, and like a neon-colored backpack with both straps across his shoulders. Okay, let's go.
1966, Mao Zedong used an army of college students to carry out his cultural revolution. Over the next 10 years, they killed as many as 2 million people and imprisoned even more. The goal was to rid the country of people who weren't loyal communists and loyal to Mao. He was able to convince college kids to commit these atrocities because they're the dumbest adults. And it's not their fault, they just became adults, but they don't know how adults treat other adults and how adults can manipulate other adults. And because they have nothing and have done nothing with their life so far, they're very vulnerable to people telling them they're important and powerful. Just listen to this one college kid from just the other day.
We're living out the values that we were taught in our studies here.
You see, not even thinking for herself, just blindly doing what she was taught. That's why we use them to fight our wars, and you can't be president till you're 35.
Oh, sick, bro. You own those kids.
I am so confused by what he was saying.
Well, we should unpack it because I've been seeing this.
Which one of those people looks like an adult to you?
Yeah. I think it's the 21-year-old.
Yeah, it's not the dude. It's not the dude. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean,
It's not Tony Hawk in his 60s.
Yeah. I think
Tony Hawk is way fucking cooler than that guy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Tony Hawk was way better.
Okay. So, I think the person who looks more mature is the 21-year-old who's standing in front of Butler Library on Columbia University's pro-Palestine encampment, but that's just me.
Talking about values. Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
So if we unpack this, he brings up the student revolution in Maoist China. And I've also seen other people bring up other student revolutions, like the Bolshevik Revolution. And I'm like, dude, why are you comparing these things, taken completely out of its cultural and historical context, and freaking overlaying them onto the American political landscape? Like, what, like, how does your mind work, bro? What the fuck?
Well, the question is, like, okay, what protest is worthy enough for you? So he brought up the Mao protest and whatnot, the student protest that led into the Mao regime. Okay, what about the Vietnam protest? What about the protest against the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan? All those other protests were okay. Like, yeah, what's so, the
civil rights? Man, that was what a terrible massacre. No.
Yeah.
Is he generally painting all protests as just, oh, it's a communist revolution? It's the same tactic. Like,
well, I mean, it's inherently very patronizing because it's like these kids don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And you know, it's so interesting for me to have that clip of that girl speaking in front of Columbia University and have her say, like, I'm you know, just going off of like the things I learned in college and the principles and stuff. And I was like, I actually was an adult going to Columbia University with actual life experiences for deployments to Afghanistan and the 75th Ranger Regiment. And I went and studied anthropology. I was like, wow, this entire system is incredibly fucked up. And so I learned that there in the anthropology department at Columbia University.
Do you think that same guy has any problem with early 20 somethings making life or death calls in combat zones? Cause that totally never happens.
Yeah. No, well, yeah.
He's got a problem with the calls my 22-year-old E5s were making, but he doesn't.
No, he actually says explicitly in that video, that's why they fight our wars for us. And you can't be president until you're 35.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, the sentiment that he's expressing, I believe that groundwork was laid by Glenn Beck when he was constantly fear mongering and telling people that all the protest, any social activism is because of like some type of communist influence. Mm-hmm. Remember the days of Glenn Beck?
Yeah,
the charge board.
Yeah.
That's what that is. He's a student of Glenn Beck. I can even tell you that right off the bat. Don't even have to know the guy. I can tell you that he was following like every episode of Glenn Beck.
Mark Levin, type. Yeah.
Yeah, but
Mark Levin, Michael Savage, all those fuckers.
But it's just so incredibly like patronizing too. I mean, I said this like 2 minutes ago. It's like these kids like what can't make decisions for themselves. They can't interpret the world. I mean, I made some dumbass calls when I was in my early 20s. Okay. But I was also, you know, dealing with my own shit. But like, if you look within the historical context of student movements, they're always significant and they're overwhelmingly on the right side of history. And this is what I call selective bro-story. Bro history, where they pick out one example that didn't work out so well. And they're like, see, you got... And it's always against any sort of anything that could be labeled leftist or progressive.
Yeah, I just want to point out that the guy currently leading the genocide is 74 years old. And how old is the guy writing the checks and sending the bombs? 80 something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but you know, that's why student movements are so threatening, as I brought up before. It's like, that's who's coming in. And right now, the entire system is kind of in free fall. And it's kind of out of reckoning because what we're seeing right now is these cops, which, as we've established, which I argue and many other politicals, theorists and sociologists also argue, are meant only in Western society to protect the rights and privileges of the ruling class, are literally beating, arresting, pepper spraying kids at Harvard, Yale, Columbia University, UCLA, UT Austin, like the ones who are supposed to inherit, replace their primogeniture in the ruling class by the ones who are structurally and historically meant to protect them. So this,
since you put that out there at the beginning, Greg, I've been racking my brain trying to think of a society where that is not the case, and I can't think of one. They do that in every single case I can think of. They're there to protect money, power, and government systems. That's it.
Yeah. And so now the ones, the ones that the children of the ones that they're supposed to protect, who are, will inherit their family position in the ruling class, so that we can call it reductively, are actively being alienated to the police force itself, and to brought more broadly to this system of global Western imperialism that's being exemplified in microcosm in the Israel-Palestine conflict. So it's an inflection point. I mean, it's big, man. And so today or last night at Columbia University, where the flashpoint for where all of this happened, the students were threatened with, you know, if you don't get off the lawn and stop occupying the lawn, you will not receive your graduation certificate. So what did they do? They broke down the encampment and they took Hamilton Hall. They occupied Hamilton Hall, the building, which is a faculty building, which is on the quad right across from the lawn. And they're holed up there. They stole police barricades and so the cops are going to have to lay siege, and it's totally freaking awesome. And also this is actually what they did during Vietnam and during the civil rights movement and during apartheid, South African apartheid. They occupied Hamilton Hall. So this is just, you know, it's a long tradition of this. And I don't know how all these freaking geezers, how all these media people don't recognize that. They refuse to recognize any of it. And it's all about divestment, because that's what it was about before. And Vietnam was about divesting from, like, defense contractors. During apartheid, it was about divesting from South Africa. And now it's about divesting from Israel. So the disconnect, it's like, you're talking all this shit about these kids, but who's the real dumbass here? I didn't freeze.
Well, no, I was assuming that question was rhetorical. Did you really want me to answer that?
I mean, you can.
So, obviously, I don't think they're dumbasses. I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think they're just trying to convince the old fucks at home who are watching this shit and believing it. Like, the demographics who watch, who are believing this narrative, are older, sitting at home in a chair, still watching cable. They don't even know how to use their fucking phone. They don't even know how to download an app. So when they're sitting at home and they hear a Fox News reporter talking about how this is, these are pro Hamas terrorist supporters, anti-Semitic, they're sitting in their fucking old, you know, worn out reclining chair, like, oh my god, this country's being taken over, goddamn Susan, come look at this. This is the demographic they're talking about. So I don't think that the news reporters are completely aware of what these protesters, of the goal of these protesters and why, and the historical significance of them, because I guarantee you that a lot of these reporters have legacies from the Vietnam era, and they were in that journalist sphere, so they understand the irony and the significance of it. But they're working for the system, so
there is no group that has been a bigger disappointment to me this entire time since October than our own media. I think journalists and journalism in the Western countries has failed us. I have not seen it fail this hard in my lifetime. I'm just massively, massively disappointed. Even, you know, you guys have pointed this out before, even sources that I thought, you know, you could depend on, right, like NPR or The Economist or things like that, have all shown their true colors, that they're all inherently owned. They're either owned or afraid. They're in one of two camps. And I'll tell you what, I have no use for journalists that are owned or afraid, because it's the kind of bullshit that they put on TV. They watch the same thing that we watched, you know, you were at in LA, that we were at in UT Austin. They watch the same thing we watch, and they put out some bullshit on the news about, you know, this is anti-Semitic as well. It was like, the fuck, dude, you were standing next to me with a camera. Like, how are you saying that?
Yeah, that said Jews for Palestine. Yeah, no, but see, here's the thing. You don't have to go too far to realize why. It's like, we're surprised that all these media companies are all towing the line for Israel. But all you got to do is just look at the financial paper trail. It all goes up to BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard. They're all owned by that parent company. you branch out, they're all owned by it. So why would a company, you know, report against its own interests? It's simply not going to happen. And honestly, whose fault is it? It's our fault. It's our fault as Americans that we slept on this conglomerate, this monopolization that's been taking these mergers that's been happening and mergers have been happening. It's all been happening and we've been sleeping on it. So we're all of a sudden surprised that all the media companies are all towing the line. It's on paper. It's literally financial.
Yeah, to my knowledge, the consolidation started in the 60s, I think. And then one of the biggest consolidations was in the cable news era, which is our parents' news era. Yep. And I'm sure we're seeing the continuation of that, right? Yeah. Well, I think the 60s was like some of the first media company mergers. But even back then, you still had journalists that, you know, were doing journalist stuff, even on television.
I mean, yeah, you know what? You bring up a good point. Like, I can't say that this is anything new because you look at William Randolph Hearst.
Yeah.
Right? William Randolph Hearst is, if you ever watched that movie Citizen Kane, it was a great satire on William Randolph Hearst. Citizen Kane, if you watch the movie, it shows how he's like the archetype of creating that media empire that uses that influence to manipulate industry, demonizing marijuana because he didn't want the hemp industry to rise because it would threaten his paper industry. So it's nothing new.
Mark, though, I guess because the only thing that makes me think like it, you know, or it shows me like obviously something has changed, right? Is during Vietnam, the Vietnam War was on the nightly news in living color, right? Like full on combat footage was on people's televisions, and that didn't happen for our wars. That didn't happen for I don't think it happened really for 91 either. It can't have happened in 91. The Pentagon completely controlled the media coming out of the combat zone. But I remember and I've heard my dad talk about this before. It was like, you know, you were watching firefights on, you know, the 6 o'clock news in your living room with your family. Like that happened all the time. That doesn't happen anymore. So at least, you know, it has gotten worse measurably in some way.
I mean, but they're digging their own grave at the end of the day, because obviously it's only going to take a couple of months before a lot of Americans realize, oh, they're fucking lying to us. Just like they lied to us for the past 3 years about different situations. So what that's going to do is it's going to obviously diminish the faith of Americans in these media companies. And where are they going to go?
What's the saying in the U.S. government system? Every 20 years, they declassify a bunch of shit and say, yeah, we did it. What are you going to fucking do about it?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. It's too late now. It's all over. Yeah. That's what's sad about it. I wish. Yeah.
No,
I hate it. I hate the fact that we wait for shit to come out officially for us to finally be like, oh, it's like, let's figure it out now. Let's get ahead of the game. You know, that's the game. Sorry.
Well, we're starting to do that, right? I mean, social media has been a big help with that.
Yeah. I was about to say, social media has changed all that.
And that's why the legacy media has been trying to demonize it. So, but there's been this massive system collapse. It's not just in media and what the younger generations are trusting now. It's also, if you look at recruitment for the military and for the police, like they're down. They're not meeting quotas. So, you know, they're constructing all these cop cities around the country, and it can like look really hopeless. But then again, there's just not going to be enough cops to fill all the slots.
Can you go into that a little deeper about the cop city, just briefly about the significance of that and why it's a desperate act?
Well, okay. All of these cop cities, the plans for their production began, you could argue easily, in response to the unprecedented national mobilization of the BLM movement. And so the plans were put in place a while ago, and now cop cities are a central location within most states in America where cops will go and train, as obviously it's meant as a paramilitary training site. So at the beginning of the episode, in my essay, I talked about the militarization of the police force. Police in the UK, Europe, and America have always been militarized, but they're becoming even more so with paramilitary training sites now, which is Cop City. And the biggest one is going to be outside of Atlanta, apparently, and there's going to be a bunch of smaller sites within other states. And so, yeah, Cop City is kind of freaking scary because the cops are basically going to a military school because, you know, we're in the military. Sometimes, like, your training gets outsourced and you have to get a government travel card, and you fly to a school, and you learn a certain set of skills within a certain time frame, and you fly back to your unit, and that's just like how the military operates. So yeah, Cop City is inherently militarized. So that's concerning because, again, there's supposed to be a civic police force, and it was intended originally to be an alternative to martial law, to sending in the army, but that doesn't really exist if they're, you know, militarized. But of course, the origins of policing are founded in colonial counterinsurgency units in Ireland and slave patrols. So, you know, people think that these things only exist in like the 19th century in the history books. You know, this level of gross colonialism only existed during the British Raj, which has been, or in Algeria, which have been dismantled. But everything surrounding Israel shows that history, like things haven't changed at all. Like we say, like we're living in the 21st century, but all of these systems are still in place. All of these political agendas are still active. The systems haven't changed, and that's
they're just adapted.
And that's what Palestine has brought to the forefront for the global conversation about this.
Okay, so can we take a moment to talk about tactics for a second? Let's do it. Can we do an AAR after action review of the protests of UT? The things that were done correctly, the mistakes that were made, the most effective strategies that were used, the new tactics that you might have seen the police starting to use, what we can educate the audience on to mitigate those, do a workaround those tactics. What did we learn from y'all's time on the campus?
Okay, well, first of all, operational security was maintained. There's no indication that the police knew that this was going to happen, even though, you know, it's now kind of legal to monitor American citizens and their electronic communications. So that's one thing. That's one sustain that was good.
Having been to, you know, some of the a good chunk of the BLM stuff in Austin, previously, this was very well organized, in my opinion. Very well executed. The students did a great job of being present and resisting without giving them any excuse to blame the escalation on the students. They really didn't give them anything to work with there. I think the reality is that if they're going to send 200 state troopers in, whatever you've got set up is going to get dismantled eventually, and people are going to get arrested. But they made that take 5 hours.
Yeah,
or something like that. I mean, they did a really good job, and they sat there, heat catting. There may be some stuff, for the improved side that's possible there, but I personally was impressed. I was impressed with their fortitude. I was impressed with their resolve, and I was impressed. Frankly, I was impressed with their discipline.
Me too.
I don't have anything to say like really significant. Like, oh, you could have done this, blah blah. The medics.
No. I'm not saying.
Oh, I got you. It's an AR. I understand.
I was about to say, like, I was extremely impressed after, especially seeing that footage that he played, that the one where you saw the small police line getting pushed back.
Yeah.
I am extremely impressed with them. I do want to touch on like what these students, these protesters need to start doing for themselves.
I want to point out the bravery too, Mark, real quick, just because from our background, that kind of confrontation is not that abnormal. I think from our background, those kind of situations aren't that abnormal to us. Most of us have been in, similarly hairy situations. I saw students who, this was clearly, they looked like they were right out of high school. Some of them, outweighed by 150 pounds, against state troopers who some of those guys, are gigantic. I'm gigantic, but these state troopers were, a lot of them were pretty big.
They're on roids.
And I saw students fearlessly standing their ground, refusing to move, refusing to be intimidated. Yeah. So, like I said, I was particularly impressed, frankly.
Me too. I was emotional watching it. I'm just so proud of those kids, just seeing how brave. You're right. It's ultimate bravery because you're out muscled by equipment, by manpower, by training. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, yeah. I mean, and they have guns, And, you know, a lot of these kids have never experienced state violence before. So, you know, that's another thing. All these like boomers, you know, they're all like, okay, boomer, all of these older individuals who like want to talk shit about student.
I was going to say that guy on the skateboard is Gen X. There's no way.
Yeah. Okay. So all of these older people want to talk shit about these students. It's like, all right, well, you're not about how stupid they are. Well, they're not. Also about like, you know, how they're all liberal arts majors, but yeah, it's like, fine. They're 120 pound fucking art major, you know, faced with fucking dude in riot gear. Who's like, get the fuck up, you're going to jail. And they're just like, fuck you, pig. It's like, okay. So, you know,
yeah, and the guy's got a 3 foot freaking baton too. Right. You know, they're not even carrying nightsticks. They're carrying like the 3 foot freaking axe handle looking batons, you know? And they were aggressive, man. They were hitting people. One of them freaking, you know, one of them popped me with his baton. I didn't even move. I was standing there a foot away from the guy. He heard somebody say something that he didn't like, and he turned around and jacked me with his stick. And I mean, I was like, whatever, dude. I was just like, hey, man, use your words next time, buddy. but yeah.
Save it for when you go home.
They were not, the troopers were not hesitant to shove somebody, hit him with a stick, smack, you know, punch him, grab him. We saw all those things, especially on the ground. In the lines, they were a little more reserved because there was a lot of eyes on them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they got in the mix and they threw a lot of elbows, right? Because it's very easy to tell when someone punches somebody else on video, right? It's a little harder to tell who's throwing an elbow into a kid's head from the side.
I noticed that. When I was watching the footage, I was noticing how you had the some of the cops were the lookouts to make sure, like, are we clear to beat the fuck out of this kid? Like, you have the little lookouts who are trying to blocking, they're trying to map block, out the scene to see where.
Yeah,
exactly. Blocking positions, because, like you said, if they could have gotten away with being the shit out of those kids without cameras, rest assured they would have.
I think it was very good that they surrounded. So, you know, you got the inner ring of people in the encampment, and then you have the ring of the police, and then everyone who's not in the encampment got right up around the ring of cops and would not move, which is great.
It was beautiful.
It's very hard for them to do shit that no one can see when everyone's right up on them like that. It's like, no, if you do something, we're all going to see it, you know?
No, West Point couldn't pull off that type of formation skills.
Greg's like, well, I've seen this before. I was like, dude, I went to a military academy. The only protest I ever saw was the North Area riots when the power went out.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, that wasn't political. That was just we were in a prison.
Yeah, and you know, this thing, I thought the entire thing was a very successful operation. So
absolutely.
And then when the cops got kicked off campus. The students reoccupied the lawn. You know, the cops destroyed the tents. They destroyed the tables and everything.
Empirically demonstrating the futility of the entire response.
Yeah. So that entire expense.
A lot of waste of tax money right there.
Yeah. And then the lawn got occupied again. They got so really embarrassed. So they sent out that media statement that was just complete lies. And that's the entire issue for you in microcosm. There's truth on one side, there's absolute lies and shitty reporting and shitty journalism on the other, and all these students are doing is ask nothing radical, everything's peaceful. It's like, hey, can our school stop giving money to fucking a genocidal regime? Can we stop doing that? Is that the biggest ask? But yeah, of course they're painted as like Hamas supporters and all this shit. And that's getting so old. It's getting so old at this point.
Yeah, it's, and I say, let them keep saying it because it's going to lose its potency. It loses potency the more they say it.
And also, if the return on your endowments and the return on your, you know, your collegiate hedge fund, which essentially a lot of them are, is so important and so great, then why is tuition so high?
Yeah. But real quick, I want to circle back just as a PSA to the PSA aspect of this episode for what students could have done better to protect themselves and their bodies, like hydration. Were they staying hydrated? Were they being good about that? I think
it's very hard for them to do that because once the cops show up and they have to link arms, and anytime the police get near them, they have to like keep their arms linked and stay in position. But
Okay. And what's our military solution for these kids? What's the military advice we can offer them? Camelbacks. Am I wrong?
It's possible. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not lying. I'm not making a joke. I'm saying, I was looking at these things like, I wish we could really, we need to offer our military expertise to these kids to make it more safer for them. Like you're talking about how much, how hot was it? Over 100 degrees in Texas? Yeah.
There was obviously a lot of heat injuries going on in the encampment.
Okay. So guys, listen to this. Camelbacks is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Okay. Camelbacks. I mean, a lot of them knew what to do. Umbrellas against pepper spray.
That was great. Love seeing that.
Yeah. Sunglasses against pepper spray, some sort of eye protection. Also just strength in numbers. The more people are, the safer everybody is, because cops are actually scared. Cops do not like being outnumbered. They're used to feeling powerful and in control. Like when they pull over someone on the side of the road, that's why they call in three other squad cars. So there's like six of them against one driver. So they're completely out of reckoning when they're outnumbered, because they're used to being the only guys with guns, the only guys in tac gear, with the numbers on their side. So, they're actually really scared in these situations. And that's why we were able to force them off campus, because of the weight of numbers. And, we could get bogged down in tactics, because there are tactics for like how to kettle cops.
Well,
and
can we have an episode?
We could, but, I do want to focus and like wrap up with.
Well, and again, when you're dealing, numbers matter, right? So when you're dealing with 200 state troopers augmented by 20 Austin PD, the reality is it's going to get dismantled. It's a question of how long. And, they did hold that position for like 5 hours. So
no, it was successful. I'm just talking about the safety of kids, like in the heat. I'm just talking about the elements here. I'm just talking about things, little things that they could, that we could educate them on, so that the next time they go around, they're as comfortable as possible.
Well, Camelbacks is a good thing, but like they were doing everything right. So,
They were doing everything right. I'm just saying that like it's anything that we could offer them to make the next go around even better.
I mean, again, we did mention heat injuries, but Mark, I'm telling you something you don't know, but the most like their egregious injuries were police inflicted, obviously.
Oh yeah, I know.
Getting their heads cracked on stuff, disabled people getting thrown out of their chairs. It was pretty fucking brutal.
That's a whole nother conversation.
And Texas cops are going to be bad because they're so much more militarized. So yeah. I think that BLM was a great testing ground for a lot of this. I've been seeing stuff on Instagram about, how to, as I said, kettle cops, how to protect themselves, how to not get trapped into limiting terrain that they can't escape from, and cops can surround them, because they, at that point, cops won't let you escape. They'll just start saying like, get out of here, but you can't leave. And they'll just arrest everybody once you are kettled by cops. So it's just like, there's just different tactics like that we can get into.
I do think that's a good general statement, Greg. It's one of the few things I did notice. Nothing happened because of it, but I remember at certain points we were in, essentially a big long alley shaped road, with a lot of people and a lot of police on one end. And I remember thinking, we just went from an area where we had three exits and three avenues of approach for ourselves into an area where we're completely constrained. Luckily, the momentum stayed on the student side and they continue to push them right the fuck off campus. But those are things that you need to think about. Like if they push on me, where could I go if I need to move sideways or backwards? Can I, but the situational awareness looked to me pretty damn good. And I will say also, we won't talk about how, but the communication was pretty damn good too. Word was getting, people would coalesce in one spot where they were needed and then come back and coalesce in the other spot when they were needed there. So,
And so I think going forward, I would like to say that administrations would know better than to call in the fucking goon squad. But as we're speaking right now, the NYPD is coming onto Columbia campus en masse, like hundreds of NYPD tonight, to surround and lay siege to Hamilton Hall. Like, if you're not watching on video, like that is an insane amount of cops.
Can you announce the handle that you're showing?
It's that guy, YKRE Bourne. Yeah. Wow. There's hundred. That's like 500 cops easily.
Okay.
So yeah, just rank and file. Fascists love their all formation. Yeah. So, they're there to protect the property and administration, and not anyone's right to free speech. And you know, I do want to eventually.
Half the professors are with the students anyway.
Yeah, and you know, there are some people that will argue that property destruction is actually still not inherently violent, but I think that's beyond the scope of this one. So I do hope that this was educational. We definitely did want to touch on the campus protests and the origins of the police, and the fact that it's imperial feedback. You know, these cops go over, there's a liaison program between our police and the IDF. The IDF's entire purpose is to enforce occupation and apartheid on the Palestinians. And we're seeing a lot of the same things here. The entire premise and foundation of modern police in the Western world is based off of colonial systems of coercion, and nothing's changed. You can't argue that it has. I mean, you can say that they're body cams now, but you know,
dude, does that really stop anything?
Yeah.
The worst import from Israel is not visible. The worst import from Israel is things like Pegasus being used against U.S. citizens.
That's the absolute most
dangerous escalation. The mobile eye, facial recognition, stuff like that. Like I've actually seen some of these companies and I'm familiar with them. You know, I used to work at General Motors, using LIDAR and video, you know, object recognition stuff is all part of self-driving car development, among other things, but it's obviously being applied in other areas. But the spy software to, you know, initially, where did it go first? Just like you talked about, right? Where did it go first? You know, for militarized uses against other third world countries, yeah, or against other enemy governments. Then it was like, okay, now we're going to sell it to, you know, third world governments to use, authoritarian governments to use against the people. And now it's like, oh yeah, now the West is using it too against its own people. Awesome. So it's exactly what you were talking about. But yeah, the scariest development is shit you can't see. It's reading your inbox right now. You don't even know it.
So. Hey, all my fellow libertarians, you hearing that? That's where you at? Where are you at?
They're living in a trash pile in Bear City because they fired the waste department.
Seriously, where the fuck are the libertarians, dude? When you need them, they're not anywhere. They scatter, dude, like cockroaches.
Well, no. It's annoying. I mean, no, they're mostly like, why the fuck are we, you know, giving all this money to Ukraine and Israel and all these other foreign aid packages? Like, we gave money to Iran, but like, they're not doing shit about it. So it's like, whatever. Man,
and they don't care about this police state that we're turning into. When it comes to Israel, it's like, oh no, it's okay.
I mean, they do, but just not enough to like join the leftists.
But you're forgetting. Well, you're forgetting the key plank why they don't do it. It's because libertarians still revere property.
Oh, if there's one thing.
Oh yeah,
libertarians still revere personal property, life, liberty, property. Right? That's their deal.
Right. Well, here's the thing, like. If there's any contribution I could have to any of these conversations is to at least be the bridge for conservative or for a fucking libertarian.
I think there's a lot
to join to link up with the left.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of areas where you could cross over into that conservatives should be able to get onto, you know, most conservatives.
So many, like, so fucking many,
you know,
yeah. But it's a battle of the narrative. That's the only thing blocking the conservatives and the libertarians from joining with the leftists, you know, for the sake of dismantling Israel's power over our country is
culture wars.
Is the narrative.
Culture wars.
It's just the fucking narrative we got to get our hands on.
Yeah. Although you do have a lot of conservatives saying like things now because like country music, instead of being anti-war and anti-government, is like now super fascist because, you know, outlaw country used to be a thing. So
wait. Where's Toby Keith? Yeah. Where's Toby Keith making a song about why we need a bomb?
Better yet. Where's Kris Kristofferson making fun of Toby Keith? Right.
Like, yeah. So yeah.
Where's the outlaw country guys calling these guys fascist bootlicks?
Yeah, I know. Now people are like, I believe in two things. I stand with blue and an outlaw country.
It's not how that works, right? The CMT brand of country has always been trash. Nashville's always been trash. I'm sorry. That's why the Texas guys wouldn't go play there, right? You know,
dude, the only country music I'll ever listen to is Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Cool.
I mean, Merle and Waylon and Johnny Paycheck, and there's a whole bunch of good, dudes in that group. There's a whole bunch of good dudes in that group
that were anti-cop, anti-fascist, Willie
Nelson. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. Chris Christopherson. There's a whole bunch of good dudes in that group.
All right, so, in the end, cops
says the says the punk rocker from Orange County. Like, I fucking know what I'm talking about.
Well,
I didn't know you were from Orange County.
Yeah, dude, I'm from Anaheim.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to get doxxed now. I'm from New York City.
Yeah, totally. Aren't we all? So, okay. Well, origin of cops, college protests. Now we've got NYPD.
Camelbacks.
We've got NYPD descending on Columbia, so that's going to escalate. And this story is not going to end anytime soon. Cops serve the state. Also, the next big item that can't lose sight of, apparently this Rafa assault is going to happen. They're going to apparently establish, they have a vague operational plan of establishing checkpoints to separate women and children from men. Don't know where I've heard about that before. So that will be initiated soon. And I think that will be our next episode. Because what the fuck is that shit? Essentially. So,
yeah.
Well, yep. All eyes on Rafa. And of course, the one thing we can do in America to put political pressure on the administration and end all this insanity is to support these college protests and to expand upon them. So, hope y'all do that. And thanks, guys, for joining me for this chat. And
shout out to the UT kids, man. Shout out to them. Brave motherfuckers.
And see you next time for this fucking Rafa shit show. Signing off. Check you later.